to the best of the church's music for the season of Lent at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the season of Lent, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
I had to change my policies and start creating same-sex wedding cakes, regardless of my Christian faith, regardless of my beliefs. I was required also to retrain my staff, essentially tell them that everything that I believed and had built my business on was wrong and we had to do it differently. And my staff included my 89-year-old mom, my daughter, my wife. And so I'm being forced by the state to convey a message to my mom that everything she taught me, everything that I believe, is wrong and we need to do it differently.
That's an excerpt from our interview last year with Colorado baker Jack Phillips, shortly after he won his Supreme Court bid against the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. That didn't mean the Colorado Civil Rights Commission was going to leave him alone. No more had they lost in the Supreme Court than they filed further charges against Jack Phillips. And that was just resolved yesterday, an interesting resolution. We're going to be talking about that case, a big case of religious freedom, the free exercise of religion, and a federal school choice program. Joy Pullman joins us on this Wednesday afternoon. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Joy Pullman is managing editor of The Federalist. She's author of the book, The Education Invasion, and recent columns titled, After More Evidence of Its Anti-Christian Animus, Colorado Commission Suspends Harassment of Cake Baker, and Why a Federal School Choice Program May Be the Dumbest Way for Trump to Promote School Choice. Joy, welcome back.
Hi there.
Do you expect that the Colorado Civil Rights Commission is going to leave Jack Phillips or perhaps others like him alone now?
The short answer to that is no, and it's really because the existence of the commission is to persecute people for their religious beliefs. So, I mean, I think that Jack himself is going to be not attacked by this specific commission again, although I bet he will continue to get prank and filthy and horrible, you know, phone calls and protests and messages for a really long time. But just because of the amount of evidence of bias and hostility, a personal animus against him by the members of the commission is pretty good at this point and has been rebuked specifically by the U.S. Supreme Court. So given that, I mean, I think they're probably going to have to move on to a new target. But, I mean, the commission still exists. It's still all the legal bases on which they attacked Jack still exist. Basically, their purpose in existence is to police people's grudges against each other and partly to consider, you know, the basic teachings of Christianity for 2,000 years on what marriage and men and women are, bigotry. So that basis continues. And therefore, their hostility and their attacks and their persecution of people has got to continue.
Refresh our memories. Jack Phillips' story, his road to the Supreme Court, is fairly well known, but what people didn't realize largely was that the Colorado Civil Rights Commission wasn't done with him.
Right. So he really went to the Supreme Court. I mean, he's just the fellow, as your clip, you know, walking into this segment was talking about. Some longtime customers came and asked him to bake a cake to help celebrate a gay wedding ceremony. And he said, I'm a Christian. You know, it's against my faith to, you know, to participate in that kind of religious ceremony. And they hauled him into court over it. That commission forced him to re-educate his grandmother himself, and his lawyers petitioned that all the way up to the Supreme Court, which ruled that, you know, based on the fact that the commission had carried out its duties while exhibiting rudeness against Jack, you know, animus towards his beliefs, it couldn't consider their actions to be unbiased, so they tossed it out. So what the court did not really do is affirm, you know, what the Constitution says, which is that Americans have a constitutional right to the free expression of a religion. So while Jack's case on the first cake, the gay wedding cake, was going to the Supreme Court, it was at the same time since his case, you know, was reaching high profile, that more and more complaints against him were being filed with the same commission that was pursuing him under that first case. And one of them, you know, the commission again decided to take up. That was by apparently an activist lawyer who asked for a number of obscene cakes, including a Satanist cake. And there's other things that I can't really put on air that this person and other people started calling into Jack's shop to try to force him to make for them. And the one that he declined was one supposedly for a transgender reveal party. I think it was blue on the inside and pink on the outside. He said no, and so the commission took up another case against him that continued even after the Supreme Court, you know, ruled against that same commission's handling of his own case.
So what got the Colorado Civil Rights Commission to relent in this case?
I think it seems to be Jack's pro bono attorneys from the Alliance Defending Freedom, a bunch of top legal eagles that go around the country protecting people in cases like these. They uncovered, you know, during the course of trying to protect Jack from, I mean, and let's be clear, Jack's been now in courts and in commissions and, you know, being doing re-education camp for 6.5 years now. This is a normal guy. Imagine if that was your life for 6.5 years. So his attorneys, in the course of trying to defend him again from the same people who had been spurned at the Supreme Court, they uncovered commission members. Some evidence I looked at, they had a sworn statement from a state representative saying that one of the commissioners had called him and saying, you know, I'm scared to publicly tell this, but I know from my conversations with the other commission members that they hate Jack because of his religion. And so I'm afraid of telling the truth of this, but it's, you know, I got to tell somebody. Because it's really unfair to him. And so that was one of the items of evidence they uncovered. Another one was commission members in a public meeting last summer after the Supreme Court decision against them came down. They were talking specifically, the Supreme Court had condemned comments from a commissioner named Diane Rice. And she had compared Christian beliefs about sexuality to Nazism and slave owners, you know, saying that religion has been used, you know, in to cover up for Nazism and slavery. And so she compared that to what Jack was doing, using his religion to cover up for apparently what she considered comparable bigotry and not wanting to be forced to bake a cake to celebrate a religious and maybe anti-religious behavior between two gay people. Anyway, so what happened at this last summer's meeting was two other commissioners said, even though the Supreme Court condemned those statements as you know, basically being bigoted, we agree with them. You know, we think Jack, and basically we have the war of the bigots going on here. But so the attorneys discovered, you know, that happening in that public forum. And then when they brought this evidence to light, as well as that sworn statement, the commission decided to, you know, that it wasn't worth, basically they probably were going to lose again since they had already lost on exactly the same ground. So they decided, you know, that they would stop persecuting Jack this second time.
The sad thing about this is that the Supreme Court left, I guess I'll just call it, I'm not a legal expert, they left a loose end when they made their decision in favor of Jack Phillips last year by simply saying, look, this is narrowly decided on the basis of an animus that we found in the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. We are not making a bigger decision about whether or not the state can require a man like Jack Phillips to bake a cake that violates his conscience. What are your thoughts there?
Well, that's exactly right. It was kind of a disappointing decision because, I mean, it's very, very clear that the U.S. Constitution guarantees a whole host of rights that should have been all on Jack's side, not least of which, you know, is the right not to be forced to engage in commerce that he doesn't choose. Or, you know, that basically, I mean, that's almost slavery. So, you know, saying that you have to do something that I tell you to do, you know, otherwise you're going to be harassed within an inch of losing your livelihood and your friends and your place in your community. You know, I mean, anyway, if I want to sell something or not, that's, you know, up to me. And that's been a longstanding American tradition predicated on property rights and our ownership of our own labor. So these people were claiming the right to commandeer Jack's labor, to tell him that he must do X, Y, Z. And not only that, I mean, they were saying that he not only had to do whatever they said he had to do or else, they were saying that he had to do a thing that was in the violation of his own religion, that would, you know, and in his conscience, conflict with his duties owed to God. And so, of course, as I mentioned earlier, our Constitution also guarantees the right to free exercise of our religion. It also guarantees the right, you know, to freedom of assembly, of association. We're allowed to hang out with whoever we want, to sell, you know, to whoever we want, to not, you know, you've seen those signs on doors, you know, no shirt, no shoes, don't, you know, no service. You know, if people wanted to say you want to, you know, I only serve people who wear purple mohawks, I think that should be their right. Anyway, so there's all kinds of things that were, I mean, everything that's going on in this case, particularly on a constitutional law and natural rights basis, was on the side of Jack. And so the fact that our Supreme Court could not at all, you know, talk about any of those fundamental things that come into his rights as an American citizen is really kind of shameful. That's where our country's come to.
Joy Pullman is our guest. She's managing editor of The Federalist. We're talking about two issues, moving to the second one on the other side of the break, a federal school choice program that probably isn't a good idea. We'll find out what she means by that right after this. It's time to register to vote for the president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Each congregation or multi-point parish must register their pastor and lay voters with the LCMS Office of Secretary by Sunday, March 24th of 2019. A nomination form has been mailed to every LCMS congregation. Learn more at issuesetc.org/LCMSPresident. issuesetc.org/LCMSPresident.
How do Christians live authentically in an anti-Christian society? Do we run, or hide, or fight? Do we blend in, or stand out? Are we all by our lonesome, or all in this together? Explore answers to these vital questions in the March issue of the Lutheran Witness, Life Together, Set Apart. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Our cities are some of the greatest mission fields on the planet, but the footprint of the church is shrinking. We dare not shrink from our cities. Christ is needed now in our urban areas. From chaos, turmoil, decay, death, and destruction, Jesus brings peace, hope, resurrection, eternal life, and rebuilding. And you can help by being a hero for the city. Find out how at lcms.org/citymission or on Facebook at LCMS City Mission. Every city needs a hero. Capes and helmets not required.
The Lutheran Women's Missionary League is the Lutheran Federal Credit Union Ministry of the Month. During March, if you open a Lutheran FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or if you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to the LWML. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Lutheran Federal Credit Union. Good for you, good for the church. LutheranFCU.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're moving on to talk about federal school choice with Joy Pullman of The Federalist. Ross Douthit, columnist for The New York Times, will be making the case for Christians in the public square at the one and only 2019 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 6th and 7th in Chicago. Early bird registration before April 1st is $115. That includes three meals. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org or give us a call, 618-223-8385. Making the Case Friday, June 7th and Saturday, June 8th at Concordia University, Chicago. Joy, regarding federal school choice, you have recently written this. I want to know what you mean. Any Republican who proposes expanding rather than ending the federal government's power over education is whistling past the graveyard it has made of American education. What do you mean by that?
I mean that federal involvement in America's public and private schools has done not only nothing good for America's children and taxpayers, it has actively harmed them. So its track record is one of universally negative outcomes for money and for the academic and the cultural benefit of the United States. And so given its track record, I think we cannot anymore trust the U.S. Department of Education to be able to do all these great things that we are, you know, continually hear being promised about what it's going to do and never, ever seeing materialize.
Okay, so what does this have to do with the Trump administration's statement that they will back Senator Ted Cruz's new proposal to create a $5 billion federal school choice program?
Well, it has to do with the fact that once you give a federal agency power over anything, you're granting it the power to kill the thing that it's controlling. So, and we've seen this happen repeatedly. When you create one power center that activists can target and go after, then they inevitably do, right? Because, you know, political activists have, you know, one thing on their mind. That's what kind of the definition of special interests are. So when you have a federal program, a federal agency, a federal grant of power, it is inevitably captured by those special interests, and it works against the best needs of Americans. So that's what has happened with the Federal Department of Education, and we've seen that happen as well with, the Obama administration used that department to abuse the nation's schools and the nation's school kids repeatedly over its tenure. And if you allow it through a school choice program to have access to the nation's private and even homeschools and vocational tech programs, that bill could touch all of those things, admittedly, by Senator Cruz, you're basically handing that power to, you know, what could be a very extreme leftist president after President Trump, or almost certainly in the future, you know, because the presidency just regularly changes hands between political parties.
Why wasn't anything done in the 2 years when the Republican Party controlled all three branches of the federal government?
I think that's really because a large amount of the Republican Party doesn't believe the things that they tell their voters in order to get us to vote for them. School choice is one of these things, but I mean, of course, being pro-life is another one of them. There's a number of things. I mean, being the party of fiscal conservatism is another one of them. I mean, there's a number of lines that we hear from Republican leadership, from Republican representatives over and over again. But then when they get the power to do these things, you know, they basically are able to get things that are priorities for their donors, as well as the kind of academic establishment, the political establishment in Washington, D.C., not what their base is looking for. So this is part of, you know, the reason that a lot of, you know, people cite this as a reason for the Trump presidency itself, as well as a lot of discontent among the folks who kind of call themselves on the conservative side of the spectrum.
But doesn't the Cruz bill actually anticipate or try to limit the kind of control that could be extended over alternate kinds of education? I'm just reading. It says nothing in this act shall be construed to permit, allow, encourage, or authorize any increased regulation or control over any aspect of a participating educational provider, scholarship granting organization, or workforce training organization. This allows all education providers to be able to participate without a fear of federal control.
Right, that sounds great, but we actually already have provisions exactly like this baked into law, including the law that created the U.S. Department of Education back in the 1960s and 70s when it was set up under President Jimmy Carter. And that has not stopped the U.S. Department of Education from breaking that law repeatedly. So it's done that in myriad ways, including forcing all the entire nation into Common Core, even though that was never passed by the U.S. Congress. The Obama administration told states if they wanted their federal education dollars, they better get with the Common Core program, and that's precisely what happened. The Obama administration used the same method when forcing all the entire nation's public schools to put boys and girls next to each other in their showers and their locker rooms under transgender bathroom regulations. It used the same method when it told the nation's schools that they have to use school discipline programs that have been proven to create chaos and contributed to the school shooter in Parkland, Florida, because they constantly let violent children off the hook and never give them a police record, so they fly under the radar over and over and over again, and sometimes increasing their violence and the chaos they're allowed to inflict on fellow students. So we have prohibitions like these already written into law, and that has proven to be no impediment for the people who are running the U.S. Department of Education or Democrats, you know, a Democratic president such as Obama, when they're in office. So I don't think it's going to be, since it has not proved any barrier in the past, there's no reason to think it's going to be a barrier in the future. And since these bureaucrats have gotten away with doing that and Congress has not done its job in checked them. I think they're more likely to be emboldened and to continue doing more and worse things with the power that they have.
Is the Congress also naive about the animus that the political left has against religious people and their schools?
I mean, the short answer is yes. And it's kind of confusing to me because, I mean, it's been very high profile in the news. Vice President Mike Pence's wife, Karen, works for a Christian school in Virginia. And that school has been, you know, harassed over and over because it, again, it upholds to Christian sexual ethics. It requires, you know, students, you know, not to fornicate, not to have premarital sex, and as well as including, you know, no gay behaviors in that group. And so for that, you know, Karen and the school have been, you know, just dragged through the mud. And so that is not just an isolated example. That is a pattern of behavior. And we're right now seeing play out in the Democratic presidential primary process, kind of this race to the extremes among the Democratic candidates, which is almost going to ensure that whoever they're going to run on the ticket for 2020, as well as likely 2024, is going to be, you know, an extreme version of a person who is pretty anti-Christian. I mean, let's just say it openly. I mean, we have sitting U.S. senators, some of them who are presidential candidates, literally saying, you know, to judicial nominees and nominees for other positions that because they are Christian, they can't be a good public official. And so that's the environment in which, you know, we're handing more power potentially to a federal Department of Education that is run by some of the most, I mean, known to be one of the most liberal departments in the whole federal apparatus. To me, that's kind of insane.
Joy Pullman is managing editor of The Federalist. She's author of the book, The Education Invasion, and recent columns titled, After More Evidence of Its Anti-Christian Animus, Colorado Commission Suspends Harassment of Cake Baker, and Why a Federal School Choice Program May Be the Dumbest Way for Trump to Promote School Choice. You can read her columns and purchase The Education Invasion at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Joy, thank you very much.
Thank you.
In Hour 2 of Issues Etc., Mary-Kate Knorr joins us, Executive Director of Illinois Right to Life. We'll talk about some extreme abortion legislation that's trying to make its way through the legislative process in Illinois. Then we'll remember 3rd century martyrs Perpetua and Felicitas with Dr. Bill Weinrich.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Hello, this is Pastor Kevin Golden of Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, Missouri. The saints at Village Lutheran are proud to be part of the Issues Etc. 300, sharing in their Christ-centered, cross-focused proclamation of the gospel. If you find yourself in St. Louis, join us on Sundays at 8:15 and 10:45 for the divine service, 9:30 for Bible study and Sunday school, as we receive Christ's gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation. Or visit us on the web at www.villagelutheranchurch.org.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore. Thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority. They've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. thecleaningauthority.com.